My name is Dustin Wheeler. My family calls me Dut Duck, and my love of wine created the Dut Vine. The joy and passion I have is a bottle of knowledge I want to share with you. Let me be your favorite sommelier and pour you a big glass of edutainment so you can sit back, swirl it, sniff it, and sip it as we ducks fly together through the wine world. Let's duck and go! Hello, all my duck friends. Thank you so much for joining us in our next episode as we kind of continue this series of intro to wine. After our last two, it's been an exciting growth. I hope you've enjoyed those two episodes and excited for more. As we continue to grow in this, just want to say thank you. Appreciate all of you guys, all the subs, all the Patreons. If you haven't already noticed, Google Podcast is gone. It's now YouTube Podcast. So if that's where you got your content before, make sure you've updated that. I'm sure you got all the warnings. But anyways, it is time. It's finally time. After we've talked for two episodes about the grapes and how they were grown, growing cycles, harvesting, we are now ready to make wine, to get this beautiful juice that we all love. So we just squeeze white grapes for white wine and red grapes for red wine, right? Well, what about rosé if we throw that into the mix? And why are some Chardonnays rich and buttery and others sharp and crisp? This really starts these flavors and styles to be developed in winemaking. So no, it's not just as simple as we're going to press this white grape and get white wine and red and get red wine. There's a lot of, again, choices that the winemaker at this point has to really make to see where we're going to end up with our end product. So it's really interesting to see. And what's even more interesting is you can't just squeeze white grapes or red grapes and make the wine. As a matter of fact, if you did that, both the white wine and the red wine, even though, you know, white wine comes from green grapes. Anyway, when you do that, the juice is kind of clear. It's got this, it's either clear or kind of grayish clear color to it, just the juice. So right off the bat, we have to do something. The skin is super important in that, and it really influences the color as well as many other factors in the whole structure of wine. So hopefully as we go through this episode, you'll start to see some of that. So let's start big picture. White and red. We're going to kind of focus on these. I think rosé will have its own episode, sparkling as well. They're similar but different, and so I just think if we did all of it in one lump, it would be hard. And this may be a very unique episode where we kind of start 30,000 feet view and then dive a little closer. Because even when you talk about how much similarities there are between making white wine and making red wine, there's also a lot of uniqueness to each style that ends up with the end products that we know and love. So this could be almost a mini episode as well. So we'll kind of go through this. We'll see where we end up. It'll be fun, but now we're really getting into the juice. So grapes are harvested. I will kind of go through steps here and try to make it as clear as I can. Say, all right, we're here. White, you do this. Red, you do that. Next step, white, you do this. Red, you do that. That's going to be the goal. But again, about halfway through the process, it'll shift a little bit. And so we'll have to focus on one a little bit, and then we'll shift, focus on the other a little bit. So I hope this makes sense to you. But anyways, they're both harvested. Then you make the decision with the whites. Will they be destemmed or will they go in whole cluster? Reds could be crushed right away. Or they go through the same thing. They could be destemmed or whole cluster, or they could start their maceration. Let's talk a little bit more about maceration. Don't worry. Then in the next step, so harvesting, choosing if we're destemming, what are we doing there? The next step. Rights. The whites will be crushed. And then it's a very, I mean, obviously before they crush them, they know what they're going to do. But it's a very quick process if there's any skin contact. I already mentioned that the juice coming out of a white grape will be clear. And I also mentioned that those grapes are kind of green. In a previous episode, I mentioned that both grapes, no matter what, when they're really young, are a dark green. They're very bitter as well. And even as they start to shift out of the younger phase, those green grapes still have a bitterness quality to the skin. So if there was any extended kind of contact, this bitter quality that's really a defense mechanism, juice is left in contact with that, we create very unpleasant flavors that nobody would enjoy. So some wines, depending on what they're going for their style, or what the grape is, that also plays a big factor, might see a little bit of contact. You're talking maybe 30 minutes, 4 hours, maybe a little bit more, but it's very quick if they do any kind of skin contact. Please keep in mind when I say it could be any kind of white grape, because there's hundreds of them. In Italy alone, there's 900 different varietals that are classified to be made wine out of. It's just nutso. But if they do skin contact, this can develop depth for those whites. Reds, at the other hand, at this stage, so kind of like third step in on white, we've already pressed the grapes, pulled the juice out. On reds, we're already starting the fermentation process. And now we're using the skins to develop color and flavor. So very different from what we're going to do on the white side. The skins are actually needed in the red wines, like we talked about. Clear juice, again, kind of that theme that we started with. We need those red skins to be there to help develop color, flavors, depth. The skins offer a lot of things like tannins, and they have this anthocyanins that are in the skins. And that is the ability for that pigment to be transferred. Chemical compound. There's lots of natural foods that do this as well. While this is going on, this fermentation, maceration period happens. And it happens along with fermentation because there's two byproducts of fermentation. Alcohol, CO2, and heat. And what we're doing here with maceration, where it's the juice of the grape is still in contact with the skins, those skins are there. The maceration is very similar to think about doing laundry. If you have a bunch of colors and a white shirt with a bunch of reds, and you leave them in warm water or hot water, you'll start to see more color bleed. It's basically that same thing here. Now, what's going on during fermentation, like I talked about, that byproduct of alcohol, CO2, and heat, the more you warm it up, the more that color fade can happen. So typically in fermentation, the happy place is above 65 and below 85 degrees Fahrenheit. If you get much higher than 85 degrees, winemakers try to avoid that completely because your flavors and your aromas will actually start to cook out. You'll start to end up with harsh wines, vinegary wines. So it's this balance of timing and temperature and all kinds of things. So just to kind of define maceration a little bit more, because we'll break all this down, but maceration is in the winemaking process where phenolic materials, tannins, those anthocyanins flavor compounds are leached from the grape skin, seeds, stems, into the must. So what is must? Must is another step in winemaking, especially that's in reds, but it is freshly crushed fruit juice, usually like obviously grapefruit juice, that still has all of the skins and seeds and stems. But at this point, the difference is it hasn't gone through fermentation. So it's like fresh, fresh juice. Some people will call it like a young wine, and we'll actually use some of that must in some winemaking processes to help develop flavors. It's called must adjustment. Again, unfermented grape juice, depending where the grape is coming from, the climate, it may require an adjustment to create balance in the wine, or at this point, the juice that will become wine. So there's two kind of like steps here that can also happen. Chaptalization, which is addition of sugar that will help increase the alcohol content of the wine if needed, or acidification. This is the addition of tartaric acid to increase the acidity. So especially nowadays, there's this thing called natural fermentation. None of this would happen in natural fermentation. Other things go on, but just so you guys kind of connect the dots between must and maceration. But to macerate something is to soften by soaking. So that's really what we're doing with that. Between the grape juice and the skins, getting those skins broken down so we can extract those tannins and those colors, those flavors. You will see this sometimes for, again, a quick moment in some varietals that may have less flavor of white varietals, like Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon, rosés. You will sometimes see it, but nowhere near the extent of what you would get in the red. So it's going to be, again, very quick. There's a lot of great rosés that from the time that they pick do the harvest to the time that it is done fermenting and everything and just waiting to be bottled can be like 3 days. So it's a very fast process if you're talking about rosés. So maceration period has happened along with the fermentation in the red. We talked about colors changing. At this point, this is when we'll start to press the skins. Now, there is a thought process and a method for higher-end fine wines called free wine or free-flow wine, where before they press anything, they take that wine that's there and they consider it the best of the best. There's also like first press wine and it goes on and on. But if you've ever had anything that has some bitterness to it, and the more you squeeze it, think about like tea bags is a great analogy too. The more you squeeze it, the more bitterness comes out. It's not as nice as that bag that just steeped in your water and then you pulled it out and the flavor that's left. If you squeeze that, you get a much more intense, different effect. So they'll actually pull some of the wine off before they do any pressing, and that's usually saved for the higher end reds. They will sometimes add a little bit of the first press to give it some structure. So for red wines at this point, the juice is pressed from the skin or the must, and the white has already been pressed at an earlier point. So we kind of flipped them in a sense. You let the reds macerate with the skins to get their flavors, and then pressed and that started the fermentation process when they were macerating with the skin. with the whites, we press first and then the fermentation happens. So a little bit flip there. And I think you can see why with some of the evidence I've given is what skins can do to the actual end product of the wine. Then the next choice is going to be aging. Are we going to age the wine? And a lot of that has to do with the grape varietal itself. There are grapes that just aren't meant to be aged, especially in the red wine world. And that's okay. There's great, fantastic wines out there I absolutely love. Barbera is great. Beaujolais is great. Those are both meant to be young and consumed young and fresh. You'll age a champagne. You won't age a Prosecco. Different grapes, different styles, different climates. So it's okay that not every wine's meant to be aged. And in some aspects, why would we want to sit around forever and ever and ever just to wait on a wine to age? Why not enjoy what people have worked so hard on instead of it just sitting in a cellar and maybe it never gets drank at that point? You know, let's celebrate. Wine's meant to be consumed and shared. So whether you choose to age or not, that's up to you. I think there's points for both, but there are grapes that are meant to just drink young, so you don't have to worry about aging them. But then on the other side, there are wines and grapes that are so big and intense and concentrated, they need time to like calm down. So putting them in a barrel where there is a little bit of ability for them to breathe, even though oxygen's kind of like the bad guy in the wine world, a little bit can help kind of calm wine down. And so that's why barrels are used. It's not the only reason, because barrels also influence with flavor and tannin and structure. So there's more that goes into that. And even within the barrel, what kind of a barrel? How big of a barrel? What is the barrel made of? There's a whole episode of just barrel choices as well. At this point, on the white side, you may be going, well, we wouldn't age a white, would you? Well, again, it depends. There's some styles and there's some grapes that aging a white will benefit it. And, you know, everyone knows there's buttery Chardonnay that comes from oak, that comes from aging in an oak barrel. So if you like that style, you might enjoy that. There's another style also called lees aging. Lees aging, or it's a method of where you let the wine come to rest in the barrel with the dead yeast cells. That's what lees are, is dead yeast cells. And they do this stirring method to it while it's in the barrel. And kind of kicks up those lees. They do it every so often, depending on what they're trying to achieve. And it adds a different texture. So I mentioned that buttery. That's from oak. That's from aging just in a barrel. If you age it in like a neutral barrel or a barrel that's been used for more than 3 years, you won't get as much oak flavor, but you could age it on lees. And what that does is adds this very smooth, creamy, full texture. It's not buttery. It's not buttery creamy. It's just, it's very full in the mouth. It's like a cream soda. It rounds out the edges of what could be a very sharp wine. So it's a totally different feel. So, you know, in these whites, you could have one grape and do it three different agings methods and end up with three different profiles of the same wine. Same grape, same vineyard, same winemaker, same whatever, three different aging methods, and you'll end up with three different wines. So there's a lot of choices that go into this. Then, once you've aged these wines, it's time to decide, are we going to fine them or filter them? Fining them is not charging the wine money. It is basically kind of like you want to get the fine little particles out, right? It is actually a process that would cause, I know some people ask me this, why does that wine say it's vegan and that one doesn't? To really handle fining, it is a process where we use some methods to get out little It could be bits of leftover leaves. It can be all kinds of different things. So basically, at this point, we're using fining to help remove excess tannins, make the wine a little less bitter. It also clarifies minute solids, unstable proteins, things that could be suspended in wine, but why it becomes not a vegan product at that point is it uses protein coagulants like egg whites, casein, which is a milk protein, gelatin, and isinglass, which is a gelatinous substance from air bladders of sturgeon. So all of these are animal products. Now, they've developed ways to get around that and some other methods to be able to call their wines vegan. So if you are vegan and you're not sure, the most wines will not be vegan. Now, that being said, it is not left in the wine. Basically, it's kind of like stirred into the wine. It acts kind of like Velcro, and it collects all of these like little like minute particles. And they kind of bond into this suspension and fall out of the bottom of the barrel. Then they take the juice and start to rack it or age it. So you can start to see here because, you know, now we find it, now we can filter it. Another kind of process to help clarify the wine, make it look pretty to sit on the shelves, make sure that there's stuff not in the bottle when you go to take it home and enjoy it. But you can see why this episode I kind of wanted more as a broader view, because even once we get into that, there's things like punch downs and pour overs we didn't talk about. How deep can we go into barrel aging? Malolactic fermentation, carbonic maceration, a different form of maceration. Really talk more about what exactly is going on with lees aging, because that's super important. I mean, there's a lot to talk about in this. So some of these like side topics I just brought up might be some quick, shorter episodes, and then throw in a little more in-depth with red wine on its own, white wine on its own, rosé on its own, sparkling on its own. So that's probably going to be the next couple of episodes that you guys will see coming out. So I hope, again, you're still enjoying this process and really getting to learn what wine is from the start. So as we move down the road, really connects. So now when I start talking about, oh, this white, it's creamy, it's got some lees aging behind it, you'll be able to go like, oh, that was that method he talked about. And this is what happens with the wine. And we'll point to examples. I think we're going to start in the next couple of episodes being able to make some recommendations for wines that you can go out in your own shops and areas and ask for and find. So you can also start to taste these along with the episodes and really see like, okay, this is barrel, this is lees, and just the difference that it makes in the wine and the finished product that we get to enjoy. I really hope that this wasn't too confusing. I know it was a lot of information kind of fast. So thank you for sticking in there with me. As always, I hope you had some fun. Maybe you learned something, but at the end of the day, we got to drink some wine. And until next time, bye-bye, guys.